How many of the devotees that are here are going to be heading on that bus when it leaves at what time? 11:30? Leaving right now. Oh, so you've come to get everybody that's sitting in here. Okay. Anybody else? You're going to Chicago in that bus? Far out. Okay. So you wrote a question. Do you want to ask it? You don't need it written down. You know what it is, right? Can you say it? We have a portable microphone somewhere. Go ahead. Project your voice nice and strong. Someone get the microphone. Go ahead. Many of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Some of them got lost.
Some of them continued. And I always have this fear that right now, when I think that I can fulfill all my activities for the service of my spiritual master, I don't know if I can do it. So I wanted to know if you can give me, what are the key things that
we... What are the key things to ensure that one will continue or that you will continue? Got the question? A key component is being able to make the connection of association beyond physical presence. By vani, in addition to vapo. Vapo means body, and vani means instructions. Being able to connect through instructions received. Learn that now. So when that physical presence association is no longer available, one can connect through vani. Okay? Second is, I mentioned during this morning class discussion about the importance of other relationships in addition. Just, as in your life, other than your spiritual master, there is another, and it's nice if there are and other relationships, plural, that you can open your heart to and can help connect you with the spiritual master and the message of the disciplic succession. I can say another is commitment, a transcendental commitment, and then that transcendental commitment based upon service. Yes, thank you. Because constitutionally we're servants, we're going to go on serving something. So the commitment to service to the spiritual master. Beyond, how I feel today, or how I might feel tomorrow, and how I felt yesterday, but just beyond time and circumstance, a commitment. That's love. Those are three things. And Shivram, you're also getting on the bus, right?
I have to drive.
You have to drive. Oh, you came by car. So you're also going to have to leave. Look at this, he's got a microphone. Go ahead and ask your question.
I have three questions.
Three questions, okay. Put the microphone closer to your mouth.
Is preaching the same as glorifying Krishna and his devotees?
That's one of them. Is preaching the same as glorifying Krishna and his devotees? Well, yes, especially when it means that activity is done outside of the Sangha. I think of preaching as outreaching, as opposed to what we've been doing this weekend. What we're doing this weekend is nurturing the creeper of bhakti, and then there's outside of the Sangha of these close Vaishnavas, there's reaching out to others. So doing that in reaching out to others.
So the second question is, when preaching, is it that the preacher takes a bigger position than the other person?
No. The servant. That preacher is one who has received mercy and they would like to extend that mercy to others. It's just a service. That's how I see it. Not bigger, but just a servant.
My third question is about we have to receive mercy before we extend it. Charity begins at home. So I don't feel I'm qualified to preach to my colleagues at work or otherwise outside. I want to preach more to my wife and child, but then I'm neither able to do both. So
I got the last part I missed. Your wife and your child, but then what was the last part?
I'm not able to do both.
Not able to do both.
I'm not able to do either preaching outside or...
Well, inside is not exactly preaching. Going back to the term meaning outreach, that's preaching. And when you're with your wife and your child, it's probably got a different name than preaching. It's, you know, sharing or exchanging, assisting one another to understand the teachings of our disciplic succession, how to apply them, and our relationship with one another, and those things. So your statement is, I don't feel I'm qualified to do either.
In the case of my wife and child, I feel I'm not able to focus on that. And in the case of
well, when you say focus, what do you mean?
Time.
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 Okay.
And in the case of my colleagues at work, I have time, but I don't have qualification. I feel to tell them anything or do anything for them. Or I don't feel I'm able to go over the situation. I feel I'm not qualified for that either. So.
Just throw in the towel then. Do you take prasadam to your colleagues at work?
Yes.
Okay. So that's under the heading of preaching. You're extending Krishna's mercy to others. Do you have Krishna bhakti in your heart to some degree as opposed to zero or minus? And if you do, then by carrying that into the workplace, that's also preaching. Even if you don't say, you know, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 4 verse something. By your being Krishna conscious, that's extending Krishna consciousness. If circumstance presents itself that's appropriate, you can speak something. And then you don't have to be like a big person. You're just, you know, this is something that I've heard and understood and resonates with me, and boom. This is what I've heard and understood. Yeah, you know, I'm big and you're small. You're just sharing. This is what I've heard. Okay, anyone else that's about to get on that bus or drive a long distance like to Boston, Atulia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I
question of like, what are the symptoms to become aware of that I'm because of this, and how...
Say one thing, do another thing. But it's different when you're duplicity. A duplicitous person is one who says da 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 da, and they don't do da da da, and they know they don't do da 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 da, and they're not even trying to do. Now that's, you know, a little bit like the response that I gave to Shivram who just left, but you know, my standard of practice may be here. My spiritual attainment may be here. I can speak about what the goal is, and that's not duplicitous. And if it's spoken from that spirit, you know, even one can say explicitly, one doesn't have to say explicitly, I'm not there yet, but here's what the goal is, and here's how the means to reach it. An example of duplicity that Prabhupada gives, well, here's two. Thou shalt not murder, or thou shalt not kill, excuse me, and thou shalt not steal. So Prabhupada would say, you know, are you a Christian? Yes. Do you eat meat? Yes. Then you're not a Christian. It's duplicity, because your teaching says thou shalt not kill. That's duplicity. Or you accept the Bible? Yes. Does God create heaven and earth? Yes. Are there things in your life that you consider to be yours? Yes. You're a thief. So, that's, you know, when we say one thing and do another thing. It's, you know, when we're covered, so the it's not like, you know, heading for cover. It's just, if we know we're not this body. Yet, you know, we're not fully realized that we're not this body, because we have many things that are important to us and we think are ours, that's mine, is connected to the body. I don't have the full realization of everything belongs to Krishna, my real identity is spirit soul. Cultivating is, according to what standard teaching is one thing. But so in your relationship with your spiritual master, where there's duplicity, is posturing yourself or projecting yourself for image-creating purposes, knowing full well that's not really me. But striving to become that which I would like to be in service to my spiritual master, that's non-duplicitous. Another dimension of duplicity, and specifically this verse that was on the board, wherever the board is, in relation to Lord Brahma, his non-duplicitous avikalpa vrata, his non-duplicitous penance, non-deceptive penance. It was for attaining something. He didn't want to attain something other than his relationship with the Supreme Lord. Duplicity is, I'm your servant, and meanwhile I got my hand in your back pocket to see what I can get from you. Or looking, at least. What's in it for me in this relationship? That's duplicity. I'm your servant. Here's my requisition slip. You have a big warehouse back there. I'm your servant. It's duplicity. Particularly in the case where our teachings are the teachings of pure devotion. I may not be there. I'm not there yet, but I aspire for that. I value that. And I'm, by this disciple through spiritual master, I'm striving for that goal. I may be very far from the goal. I may be intermittent even in my efforts, but that's the goal. And that's non-duplicitous, because it's understood. Somebody that's on the progressive path, they're not there yet. And there's some stopping and starting that goes on. There's hills and there's valleys that go on. That's okay. Someone else that's here from Boston? Oh, no, you're here from way down there. Go ahead.
I guess you know that. One of the panel consists, I don't know if it's the words, but I think it is. One should not teach glories of willingness to
the faithless.
Faithless. And at the same time, Lord Chaitanya said, Jaya Deva, Jaya Bhava Krishna Upadesha.
Yeah.
So, how do I avoid offenses at the same time?
Well, the intimate glories of the holy name are not to be disclosed, but one not only can, but one should encourage people to chant the holy name. Chant and be happy. Chant and be sublime. Are like our mantra cards. Chanting and, your material existence will, your sufferings, the miseries of material existence will be mitigated. Those are not the intimate glories of the holy name. That's even namabhas. So we can say those things, and we don't, for a truly neophyte person, what to speak of a faithless person, start going into detailed explanations of the holy name. We don't do that. Why? Because that person can easily make offenses against the holy name. And then they're really finished. So we're trying to prevent them from experience, from undergoing reactions to offenses to the holy name by not teaching the intimate glories of the holy name to those persons. The biblical saying is don't cast pearls before swine. They'll just trample on them into the mud and anyone else heading for a long drive ahead of them? How about our Tennessee folks? Huh? You're flying. Okay, fine. Okay. Okay, so then I'll just go to our nice little list here. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that austerity of speech means speaking words of truth pleasingly and not agitating to the mind. Sometimes the truth may agitate the mind. Please give some preaching guidelines, practical guidelines on this. Well, that's the art of speaking. How to speak pleasingly. How to tell a fool that he's a fool. When, he'll be offended if you say you're a fool. So, Prabodhananda Saraswati gave one example. In Chaitanya Chandramrita, Prabhupada referred to this. My dear sir, you are so learned. You are so bright. You are so wise. And the person will think, yes. I finally found an intelligent person who recognizes my great qualification. What is it that you have to say? And Prabodhananda Saraswati continues, just for a moment, set aside all this rubbish, nonsense, garbage that you've heard and listen to the wonderful glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Something like that. That's Prabodhananda Saraswati anyways. So, some practical tips, guidelines. It takes knowing the audience, knowing the other person, where their sensitivity buttons are, and it takes sensitivity to not hit those buttons. I mean, to try your best to not hit those buttons. And one of the major ingredients in speaking pleasingly is where the other person knows that you have respect for them. The converse is, if you don't have respect for them, practically anything you say is not going to be taken as pleasing. But if you have respect for another person, and you have to say, or you're about to say something that's not directly complimentary, but it's indicating something that needs some attention, then seen as a person who's respecting them and as a well-wisher, they can receive it. So it's, you know, it's more energetic than it is like, you know, particular choice of words. Something that I apply regularly, learned from Srila Prabhupada from just reading something that he wrote about discipline. It was in relation to Gurukul, but it applies not just to children, it applies to human relations. There was a discussion with Srila Prabhupada in Dallas about the Dallas Gurukul. And the teachers were saying to Srila Prabhupada, what are the circumstances when we can discipline the children? And Prabhupada said, don't discipline the children. Show them love. And went back and forth. Yes, but, Srila Prabhupada, we do love the children, but sometimes their behavior is very disruptive. At what point should we discipline them? Don't discipline them, show them love. Yes, but, Srila Prabhupada, they're so unruly, sometimes there's no question of teaching in the classroom because they're totally disruptive. Can discipline be exercised at that time? No, show them love. And just like went over that five times, and finally they went to Prabhupada and said, okay, no discipline, we'll just show them love. And then Prabhupada said, once that is established, that's like the, you know, how you feel towards the children is clearly established not only from your side but from their side, then you can discipline. But then he used this expression, you can show the stick but not use it. Now in our Western culture that doesn't mean too much. But in Indian culture it means something. You show the stick but you don't use it. So we use our fingers like, you know, stick. I told you so many times. That's using the stick. So That's speaking about discipline, but you know, speaking the truth can also be a matter of discipline. Someone that kind of is off in la la land and they don't know it, and you want them to know that, you know, my dear friend. So those that have taken the leadership course that Anuttama teaches, I took that course, and one of the things that I remember from that course and still apply it is, if there's some words that have to be spoken that are for making a situation better, in this case it's pointing out something that truth needs to be spoken, it's appreciation, room for improvement, appreciation. It's a mantra. And he like took us through that so many times. How do you give feedback? Appreciation. And what's the purpose? Improvement. So when you're speaking the truth, if you're a well-wisher, you don't want to like dominate the person saying, I'm up here and you're down there. Got it? I'm right and you're wrong. Got it? Not like that. Room for improvement. The purpose of speaking the truth pleasingly, the purpose behind is improvement. It's so that for everyone's betterment, improvement. Some practical guidelines. And, you know, and by the way, try to be in the mode of goodness. In your life, in your lifestyle. Because when a person is in the quality of goodness, their speaking is, whatever they may say, it's pleasing. And a person is in the mode of passion, whatever they may say, it's hot. And a person is in the mode of ignorance, whatever they say, it's, you know, it's dark and depressing. And so, be in the mode of goodness. Strive, frame your life in that, those things that make up the quality of goodness and who will enhance your speaking pleasingly. Okay, that's different handwriting. To hear properly, a loving relationship must have developed between the spiritual master and the disciple. How can the insignificant services that I do lead to such a loving relationship? Well, that's easy. Patram pushpam palam toyam yobe bhaktya prayasati. What pleases Krishna is not a very sophisticated, opulent something. If that is offered with great love and devotion, that's very nice. But even if it's something very simple, a leaf. There's a bunch of leaves out the window. Find one of them and offer to Krishna with love. And Krishna will accept. So it's not the sophistication, how significant. One may not be whatever might be considered significant. One may not be very wealthy, or one may not be very beautiful, one may not be very intelligent, one may not be so many things. But like Prahlad Maharaj, because of the offering of love with which he offered what he did, the Supreme Lord was pacified. In comparison to the demigods, whose position was very significant and vastly learned. Just hearing Prabhupada say, Prahlad was just 5 years old. He couldn't even write. Hadn't even just beginning going to school. What learning did he have? And here's these big demigods. And so it's the love and devotion that makes our offerings significant in Krishna's eyes. Okay. I have been doing some activities in Krishna consciousness. What can I do to practice properly at consciousness level? Have proper feelings and understand and feel Krishna consciousness. How can I get to that stage? I think what this means is there's the external part and there's the internal part, and how do I internally cultivate Krishna consciousness because I'm doing some of the external things. That would make a nice seminar topic. It's very broad and, you know, includes a lot of things. Actually, I could just say some couple simple things. The essence of Krishna consciousness is that internal. The external is external. It's not zero, but it's external. One can perform XYZ behaviors and be an abominable consciousness. One's mind can be in the gutter while doing the arti for Krishna. So the internal cultivation is essential. The external part is an expression, when it's done properly, it's an expression of the internal consciousness. It's the forms of bhakti are natural expressions of condition of heart. And if we practice them, it helps awaken that natural condition. But the goal is that internal awakening of our Krishna consciousness. So this is something that from the beginning and progressively as our Krishna consciousness goes on, it should be carefully cultivated while we're doing our activities in Krishna consciousness. The internal cultivation is more and more where our attention should go. Like, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would perform his duties just like routine. He would go take his bath and do his midday duties and so on routinely. He would eat routine. It was perfunctory. It was external. The internal was so strong. So what we can do is practical thing. You know, in the course of, here's some training when I was a new devotee that we were exposed to. Each of the things that we do, of course this is now speaking of temple life, but rise early in the morning. Then you ask yourself the question, why? Why am I doing this? You know, our answer was, because this is how Prabhupada has trained us. It's for Prabhupada. Okay, now I'm going to go take a bath, now I'm going to put on tilak, and now as I'm putting on tilak, I'm saying mantras. Why am I doing this? It's to help Prabhupada's gift to help us become Krishna conscious. Now I'm putting on my dhoti, now I'm going to Mangalarti and chanting japa. Each of the activities of Krishna consciousness, there's a purpose behind it. It says in Rupa Goswami's writings in Nectar of Instruction, if one is negligent in the vidhis of bhakti, it's a cause of fall down. And if one does those vidhis, the regulative activities, without understanding the purpose behind them, there is opportunity for fall down. Because the essence of those is to help awaken your dormant Krishna consciousness. So be aware of the danger of not, and consciously cultivate in each little thing. Why? You know, like we come before the deities when it's deity greeting and we're standing there waiting for the door to open, the conch blows and the door opens and we pay our obeisances and we stand there for a while and then we go take Charanamrita and then we, you know, go through the rituals. But, you know, the light should be on. What am I doing? What's this about? Why? What, you know, the energetic involvement in the activity, the conscious involvement in the activity. Their prayers. What's the meaning of the prayers? What's the mood that I'm to cultivate, and why? And so, mindfully, in a conscious level, extending ourselves to each activity. The final thing I'll say is chanting japa nicely. If you do that nicely, that will carry over to all your activities. Naturally. It's our means of deliverance for this age of Kali. If we do that nicely, the consciousness component of Krishna consciousness, besides the behavior component, it will stay with you. Conversely, if we don't chant nicely, it's very unlikely, very, very difficult if it does happen, if, you know, thought of why am I doing this, you know, the consciousness level is strong in other activities besides our direct devotional ones. Here's a question. Giving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy to others, can this be considered as dan or charity? And the answer is, not only it can be considered as charity, it's the best of all charity. It's directly from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's the best of all charity. And often Prabhupada would speak like that. Even say it's stronger, the other charity is ephemeral. It's here one moment and gone the next on the platform of the body, or things that are temporal, they're here one moment and gone the next. So that's not what real charity is. Assisting a person to be bound further to the modes of nature and implicating myself further in the modes of nature. If that's the consciousness that charity means something that's on the physical and temporal platform only. Okay. It is said, we did this. This is Rupa Lala. He asked this question and left. What was the most important factor that attracted you to Krishna consciousness initially? Who wrote this one? Is it favor? Factor. You didn't crush your tea. Anyway, looks like favor. The most important factor. Prabhupada. Well, it says initially. Actually, before I knew much about Prabhupada, I was chanting. Because I had association with some persons that were chanting, and they introduced me to chanting. Because I was doing some other things. And they said, try this one, along with your other things. So I did. And I found it to be, amongst the so many things I was doing as spiritual searching kind of stuff, chanting was most effective. It spiritualized my consciousness in a sustained way unlike anything else. It was very clear. And then I came to know more about Prabhupada. Then I understood, the next thing was I understood that chanting came because of Prabhupada. Chanting came into my life not like fell out of the sky, but he brought it at the risk of his life. Literally. So a deep sense of indebtedness to him for that. And not just the chanting, but a lifestyle of devotion, which I was living without even knowing where it came from, up until I found out where it came from. What is the biggest hindrance? I think you mean was. What was the biggest hindrance you faced when you were a neophyte devotee? Probably the biggest hindrance was false ego. Thinking, you know, I'm this, I'm that. I'm a college student, I'm a medical student. I'm false ego. Completely covers, takes away the real quality of a Vaishnava or any spiritual conception of life. Krishna took care of it very, very expertly, and I was happy when he did that. It was pretty simple too. He gave me a menial service, and it didn't change. It was a menial service for a month. But I was thinking, you know, I'm not meant for menial service. I'm meant for. But Krishna took it away. I let go of it, and Krishna took it away. It was just whatever you want, Krishna. That's what I want. Not just saying it. This is this non-duplicitous. Whoops. Or question answer. Or question asker left. Shweta left. What's duplicity mean? So I meant it. Took a while. Okay, this is Krishna for you. Is it okay to try to remember the challenges I went through in the past in order to feel the mercy flowing in my life as the impressions of receiving mercy at those times was very powerful, and is very powerful, or in my memory is very powerful? Sure. Don't dwell in the past, but remember and feel grateful for those kindnesses that Krishna and the representatives of Krishna extended to you. You know, helping us to remember how kind is Krishna and how kind are his devotees who represent him. Because it's easy to forget. Wow, here's one more. Many of Srila Prabhupada's disciples... Oh, we did this. Okay. I heard in one of your lectures that we shouldn't hear from anybody outside of ISKCON. How about songs that glorify the Lord and His devotees, sung by non-devotees? Parentheses, out of ISKCON. Well, there are devotees outside of ISKCON. There's non-devotees also that may sing devotional songs. It's best to hear Prabhupada recorded in an album. Milk, just as milk touched by the lips of a serpent has poisonous effects, so also, as far as possible, one should hear transcendental sound vibration from the lips of a pure devotee. So if you have a choice between transcendental sound vibration heard from the lips of a devotee, pure devotee, and whatever other options, X, Y, and Z, not a difficult choice. Particularly hearing katha, where there's conclusions that are impersonal, it's to be avoided. But even hearing the holy name, I'll give an example, a Prabhupada example, two of them. One of them was, there was a sannyasi, or at least he had on saffron cloth, who was visiting the Brooklyn Temple in 1971. He spent the winter in the Henry Street Temple in Brooklyn, 1971. And there were two devotees. Then it was Santosh and Jai Sachi Nandana. They were learning Sanskrit to become part of the Sanskrit department and working under Pradumna. So Santosh and Jai Sachinandana deferred to the sannyasi who could chant Sanskrit. And every morning, he would chant the verse. And we thought, this is great. We have someone who is like, you know, authentically can chant the verse. And went on for the whole winter, like in December, January, February, March. And then when the weather became better, he left, went somewhere. And then Prabhupada came to visit in July of 72. And one of the things that Prabhupada heard when he visited was that this sannyasi was chanting the sloka every morning. We thought it was like Prabhupada would be very pleased. And Prabhupada was like fire and thunder and, you know, hurricane. It was... He was not at all wanting for that to have happened. He said, you have all been poisoned. But Prabhupada, yes, but, you know, yes, but. He was just chanting the slokas. We didn't hear him. He didn't give any classes, Prabhupada. He was just chanting the Bhagavatam slokas. You've all been poisoned. He was very angry. Very angry. And it wasn't like, you know, he knew who the person was and he was a Mayavadi. It turns out he was a Mayavadi. Not only he was a Mayavadi, he is a Mayavadi that had girlfriends. Because during that same time, towards the end of the week, that week that Prabhupada spent in New York, the sannyasi came along with one of his girlfriends to see Srila Prabhupada. And by the end of the visit, the man started offending Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada called in Brahmananda and a couple other strong big guys, and they picked him up and carried him out of the Prabhupada's quarters, down the hallway and down the front steps, and bounced him on the sidewalk with the girlfriend screaming behind. And Prabhupada said, I told you, you've all been poisoned. That's one example. So does it matter? Yes, it matters. Well, it's just bhajans, Prabhu. It's not just bhajans, Prabhu. If the, you know, it depends on the consciousness of the person. And if the person is an impersonalist, we don't hear from them, even chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Here's another Prabhupada story. We were in Mayapur, 1974 or 70, it was 75. And some sahajiyas. I didn't know what I read about it in Prabhupada's books, but ever seen one, heard one, you know, felt one, bumped into one. But there was a whole group of them. And we didn't know what they looked like. They looked like, you know, Bengali Vaishnavas that came in the temple room and sat down and started kirtan. And within 8 minutes, they were crying and wailing and rolling on the ground and carrying on and woo. And Prabhupada was up in his room on the second floor, and he came. I was in that park area by the side of the conch building. I saw Prabhupada come to the railing, and he called his servant. The next thing I knew, there were 10 people running down the stairs, going into the temple room and picked them up and picked them off the floor and escorted them to the front of the temple room, and not all the way to the gate. And then Prabhupada ordered that there should be 24-hour kirtan in the temple just to purify the atmosphere that had been contaminated by these people. And sure enough, as they were walking from the front of the temple to the gate, they were lighting their beaties and carrying on, and like, you know, in a moment before, they were in ecstasy, right? Rolling on the ground and crying and, oh Krishna, and all that. So, sahajiyas. So we don't hear from persons like that. Either chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, what to speak of teachings, or, anyway, we don't do that. Where this, under the advisement of our acharyas. We don't do that. And you know, whatever the yabhat is, we don't do that. We don't disrespect, but we don't go and hear their katha and hear their program. Preaching is the essence, but the ninth offense, and we did this. Okay. Does commitment mean selfless service in any circumstance? Well, that's like preeminent commitment. Because those among initiated by Srila Prabhupada who are still serving selflessly, okay, this was, you asked this question was asked already, differently. That was Sweta's question. What's to help secure people to stay in Krishna consciousness? Okay. Srila Prabhupada constantly hammered and smashed the opposition in extending mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Was that a manifestation of his purity? Or did he do that for purpose of preaching? I see a lot of purity in some devotees, still they don't use the same method. Prabhupada said he's 90% more lenient than his Guru Maharaj. Bhaktisiddhanta did it far more than Prabhupada did it. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur did it far less than Srila Prabhupada did it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a different approach. So the answer is, it's approach. It's, you know, one's the inspiration from Krishna, from within, how to best extend Lord Chaitanya's mercy to others. Some will do it this way, some will do it that way, and sometimes this way is not appropriate for a particular circumstance. Sometimes that way is not appropriate for a particular circumstance. I think I'll offer one example because it may arise in your own preaching circumstances of life. In one congregation somewhere in the United States of America, I won't say where, there's a family that grew up as worshippers of the elder Sai Baba. In fact, they're part of that Sai Baba organization. Not the current one, but one from a few generations ago. So that's what they grew up with. And then in the course of coming to the Association of Devotees, they very much appreciated the qualities of the devotees, the teachings, the practices, the standards of worship, and so on. And so they started taking up Krishna consciousness very seriously. But they had not yet gotten to the stage of letting go of this other. So one of our leading preachers in our Hare Krishna movement was invited to a home program that was held at this family's home. And as soon as he walked into their home and saw on their altar with Krishna this other picture, he snatched the other picture, put it in his bag, and proceeded the whole lecture to smash Sai Baba. The wife got up and cried and left the home. The husband didn't know what to do, wanted to gag and, you know, throttle the person who was speaking, but he didn't. It was a horrific experience. The temple president had to do a lot of damage control, you know, sorry, this will never happen again. The husband went to the preacher's home the next morning early and asked, can I have the picture back, or did you destroy it? Because the mood was like that. No, I didn't destroy it. Here's the picture back. Oh, a lot of damage. Fast forward over another 3 years. I just recently visited that person's home, you know, the next program he had since that experience. And in between was a lot of just encouraging the family in Krishna consciousness, not having a whole lot of conversation about this other thing that was part of his life. And so he asked me very directly, what about this other thing that I grew up with? What, you know, what does the Hare Krishna movement say about it? So I knew I was on the hot seat. You know, I had to have, I can't like not speak according to what Prabhupada's teaching is, but I also had to encourage the man. And so the answer wasn't an answer of diplomacy, the answer was an answer of, by very carefully following the teachings of Krishna consciousness, your attraction for Krishna will become naturally strong. And, you know, I just gave myself as an example. I grew up with a different kind of practice since childhood. And I don't feel that I, like, trashed that tradition or the essentials, the essence of what I received from childhood, from my mother and father and from my religious training. Rather, it's just maturing and growing to another level. It's not inconsistent. So, for many of the other persons who have had some contact, there was something that they were doing before they're doing what they're doing now, and this is a maturing stage of that. So in time, that will be, that, you know, you'll be grateful for the, what you received, you know, fill in the blank, whatever you consider, whatever that was that you received. And this is now continuing that same something in a very clear form of disciplic succession, descending knowledge in disciplic succession. He was very happy. He's chanting 16 rounds, and his wife is chanting 16 rounds, and do lots of service at the temple. He loves cleaning, he loves helping in the kitchen, he helps with festivals. He can, you know, a very active member and very happy. So, you know, speaking of speaking the truth palatably. So, in trying to preach, I'm finding that I'm getting a glimpse into care, affection, and concern that my spiritual guides have for me. Could you kindly discuss the balance between appreciating the mood of the spiritual master versus getting into the mind of the spiritual master? You know, the one sentence doesn't follow into the second sentence. I can just say, this is yours? Okay. The second, just address the second sentence. Something that Srila Prabhupada not repeatedly, but on more than one occasion advised, do not predicate the mind of the spiritual master. It's nice to be able to appreciate, let's say, you know, in Srila Prabhupada's case, his magnanimity or his care, his compassion, his depth of patience and so on and so on. His nice qualities. But what's inside, like what's his inner working and inner thoughts and contemplations, we don't have the capacity. It's audacious to consider that. It's like, it's easy to be offensive when trying to enter into that territory. Therefore, do not. But appreciating the mood, the, you know, all these things that you're mentioning here, care, compassion, concern, and how that may manifest, and another circumstance, how that may manifest a little differently, and so on. It tells something about, you know, the nature of the individual, but exactly the inner contemplations Don't try to go there. That may be shared, but you know, it's not like it's another thing that's not a good idea. Prabhupada, what were your thoughts when you, you know, throttled that Mayavadi? Or you disciplined one of your disciples, or you received news that, you know, Prabhupada could, or the spiritual master can disclose that if he so desires. It's not something we should like hanker for. What's Krishna thinking now? Sometimes our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in particular, had that capacity. And if there's some disclosure like that, then we can know. But otherwise, it's we're heading for a fence. If it's a very risky territory to go into that contemplation. Several times you gave an example or expressed how tolerance should be genuine. Not, yes, Prabhu, I'm tolerating you because I should. Is this a legitimate stage in becoming genuinely tolerant or to be avoided? I don't understand. The first part I understand. The second part, I'm going to have to ask, who wrote this? Could you explain? Can you project your voice a little bit further? By the way, you have amazingly clear handwriting. Some of these I have a hard time reading, but you should write all of them. They're very good. Do we have that little microphone? Little microphone? Let's go back to, let me make sure I got your question. When you're externally tolerating, but internally there's something that's aggravating, is that a right way to purify and subordinate that darker thing? Certainly, I'm trying to think if there are exceptions. Certainly, the potential is there for, you know, if you're acting for the right reason, that is, it's Krishna's instruction. I should tolerate. And I'm following Krishna's instruction to tolerate. So, ideally, that's the purpose. And that can elevate one's, you know, the darker. It can send light into the darkness of one's heart. However, it may be that one is holding on, despite that, holding on. And it's broiling just under the surface. So, in such circumstances, it may be a good idea to take some other course of action, some additional course of action. Not like throw away tolerance and just explode, but address in a responsible, respectful way, in some means or another, to someone who is one's superior. It may not be the person or the situation that you're feeling some concern about. You know, how do I best address this? And that may provide some, or ask for some time with this other person and share with the other person in a respectful way, taking responsibility for one's feelings. saying, this circumstance is out there, and this is what I'm feeling. Not like blaming the other person for how I'm feeling. So that they know. And, you know, maybe I don't have the whole picture of what that situation is about. But the part of that's in my paradigm over here is, I find this very agitating. I'm thinking of a couple of examples where persons have confided, you know, they're very agitated by that. And part of the solution is to communicate directly with that other individual. Is this the whole picture, and this is what I'm feeling about, and let's have some discussion, some heart-to-heart discussion. Are you open for having that dialogue? Maybe that's appropriate. And in many cases, that doesn't happen because there's this thing that says, I don't trust them. If I say X, they're going to say Z. If I say Z, they're going to say B. You know, there's this, you know, I'm not going to, what's the use? I don't, forget it. So then another alternative is a village elder model, meaning someone that's a neutral, respected by both parties individual, where I can remain anonymous and that person can say, you know, out there in the universe there's some feeling that says X. And then maybe that sometimes helps. So try the forgiveness and sincerely follow that and see if Krishna takes that other feeling away. And, you know, if it's done sincerely, sometimes another piece falls into place and, oh, I was unaware, and somehow it's just like it's gone. There was another part to the whole picture that I was just unaware of, and now that I'm aware of that, wow. What time should we go until? It's now 12:27. 15 minutes?
Sure.
Huh?
We were scheduled to go until 1.
Scheduled to go till 1.
But
we started a little early. Okay. I don't want everyone to get, you know, lose attention, get restless. And how to stay surcharged after this retreat. Don't go. Dhruva's got a place for you. Well, this is a common question that people ask. I'll say two things. One is, something that I remember having this dialogue when I was visiting in Boston, and it was a question that Krishnapriya was asking about, you know, staying with some inspiration. And one of the things that happens when we get inspired, we forget what that connection that brought about the inspiration is and was. And we get all excited to go off and do something. But we just like lose our connection. Conversely, if you stay connected, then that surcharged spirit, it won't be the same as being with 300 devotees in the kirtan and morning till night, you know, nice activity. It won't be the same, but it can be a charge, a spiritual charge. a nice scriptural example of this I like particularly is from Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto. It comes in chapter 4 of second canto. Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit have met. Comes at the end of the first canto. Maharaj Parikshit asks two questions. It takes three chapters to thoroughly answer those two questions. And in effect, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam could have been over. But because it was Maharaj Parikshit who was hearing, he had, you know, a whole bunch of other questions. But one of the areas of those questions was about creation. Shri Shirata Damodar Ki Jai. So in relation to creation, when Shukadeva Goswami began to speak, it wasn't just that Maharaj Parikshit was like us. You know, he didn't go to school yet, spiritual school. You know, he was Maharaj Parikshit. He was educated from his childhood by the most elevated Vaishnavas. He already had the information, so he wasn't looking for a new set of information. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to understand how the Lord creates, like, How does he do it? How does it come about? Not just the technology of the thing, but, you know, more than that. A more deep understanding. So, when he gave the answer, began giving the answer, Shukadeva Goswami was just speaking about the personality of Godhead. He was offering prayers to Srila Vyasadeva for giving transcendental knowledge. It's just, he was speaking words of glorification that, oh, by the way, was answering his question. He didn't just go run over there with the new this set of information and explanation. He was so spiritually connected that he didn't at all depart from that connection as he's giving the answer. So, that's how to stay surcharged. You stay spiritually connected. By your internal consciousness. That there are many lessons and teachings and things and, you know, being with the devotees and inspirations. So it's not just you take some pictures and you go home and you look at your photo file. But you connect from the heart on the things that you heard and the persons from whom you delivered and who delivered those and the animated way and inspired way and, you know, those personalities from whom you receive something wonderful. The second is just a broad answer. By being Krishna conscious, then the tendency to forget is diminished. Like we'll take the situation with Krishna and Arjuna in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So many times Prabhupada explains this, that Arjuna was with Krishna when Krishna spoke to the sun god Vivaswan. Arjuna can't remember it. Krishna can remember it. And why? Because we, or Krishna, like Arjuna, we're identifying with the body. And because we identify with the body, we forget. And if we're not identifying with the body, remembrance is there. It stays with you better if you're not identifying with the body. But if you're identifying on the platform of the soul, the experience will be richer and deeper, and the remembrance will stay with you, or the forgetfulness which is attached to the body is diminished. Like, you know, when a small child, like the other day, when the child woke up, all of a sudden he just started screaming. And his parents went running. So, is that child going to remember that today? It's gone. He forgot it. Probably forgot it as soon as, you know, got outside, is in the arms of his mother, and everything's okay now. For the moment, till the next scream. So, because we strongly identify with the body. But if we strongly identify with the soul, we're using the body in Krishna's service, but we strongly identify in the spiritual platform, that remembrance stays with you. The inspiration stays with you. Otherwise, it's like, you know, filling up your bucket that's got a whole bunch of holes in it. And as you're walking down the path, the bucket empties. Because your bucket's got a hole in it, a bunch of holes in it. So fill up the holes. And the water stays in. The spiritual conception is minus the holes. And another answer is, similar answer, but the Krishna consciousness starts in your bead bag. Everything depends upon how nicely you chant the holy name. Every day, every day, every day, day in and day out. Chanting the holy name very nicely. Because then that will connect you to that spiritual place that the festival or the retreat experience was like, because it was also on the spiritual plane. You know, that cloud of forgetfulness is dissipated by connection with Krishna through the holy name. It works that way. I'm sensing we're going to end at 1:45. See, by the doodle here, this is yours. It doesn't have your name, but it's got your artwork. When we sing bhajans by the acharyas who have intimacy with the Lord, what should be our mood? Since we don't have that same intimacy with the Lord. You're associating with that person, that great acharya. They're giving their association to you according to their mood. They're intimately disclosing their feelings of devotion with you. It's very personal. Take it that way. And it's not your feelings, it's their feelings. It's their realizations, which they're sharing with you. How kind. It may be instructive, but maybe just inspirational, or whatever. It's you know, here's an acharya who wishes to leave behind him his experiences so others can connect with the Lord of his life. And we can, you know, that's the best. Embedded in that, there's teachings, and you can just take the teachings, and, you know, that's not the fullness of the experience. The fullness of the experience is they're giving their association very mercifully. And it's, you know, so the messages are there, the mood is there, but their personality is also there. And they're giving that. That's ideal. How do you give your whole heart to someone? What does it mean? Doodling is great. Here's a little girl with a long braid behind her. It looks like she's got glasses on too. And she's holding her heart out like this. And she's standing before somebody standing there with glasses and a danda in his hand. Don't know who that might be. How do you give your whole heart to someone? What does it mean? That's two questions. That what does it mean is in parentheses. This phrase, from the heart, or act from the heart, or give your heart, it has a lot to do with this non-deceptive terminology that I was using, because the Bhagavatam uses it also, or non-duplicitous. It means two things. It means the place that from which you're extending yourself is, you know, there's no pretense. It's you. It's like Prahlad said to, very much like Prahlad said to Lord Nrisimhadeva. He dismisses one, that's, I'm not, this is not Vanik Seva, I don't want something from you in this offering of service. There's only one thing. I'm the servant and you're the master. And that's our relationship and there's nothing else going on. So that's the exclusive part. But another is, you mean it. our capacity to act from the heart it grows. We can say it the other way around. It starts very small. But if we exercise like that, then it grows. Because in Krishna Loka, or in our eternal stage of spiritual perfection, everything that is done is with full devotion for Krishna. And those who are representing Krishna in our lives, those relationships are very important. And I want to repose all in all, not holding back, not just saying it but not meaning it, and holding on and going to that program. But so our capacity is minimal because we're not experienced in that realm of spiritual loving exchange. But according to one's capacity, you extend yourself genuinely without expectation. That's what it means. And gradually that grows in a reciprocal way. It's not a one-sided thing. I'm looking at the painting of Ramananda Roy, who Lord Chaitanya is standing before him, but because of that exchange with Ramananda Roy and the non-duplicity of that exchange, Lord Chaitanya then showed his form of Radha and Krishna. Like these verses that I read from the 11th canto, chapter 3. When one factually surrenders to Krishna, Krishna clears away all the garbage, all the contaminations of material existence, and he gives himself to that devotee. So that's what it takes to get Krishna, is that giving our heart to Krishna and to those who are representing Krishna in our lives. Or, not just something, or some wealth, or some ability, or some service, but the heart. And then the offering is, it doesn't, you know, the significance is not in what the offering is. The significance is in the sincere gesture of making that offering. And that will grow in the course of time. Okay. Look at that. It's 1:45. I think we're going to end. We all have some, well, most of us have some distance to travel. I think Dhruva and Parijat are just going to have to recover.